with the first pick.
And we are back with episode 3 of the Dapped on Draft podcast. 3 weeks in, going smoothly. It's about to pick up now. We're getting into to bowl season, playoffs soon. Prospects are declaring. Prospects are back to school. Prospects are transferring. News is picking up. It's about to get really busy. So as always, we are here with me. I'm one of your co-hosts, Corey Kennan, here with Devin Jackson. Devin, how are you?
Man, I'm good. Like I've been telling you off air, been a busy week. Had a work conference, so I was out of town for a couple of days. But excited to I'll be able to share some news, on social media. So I'll obviously drop the handle later in the show and some exciting news. But I'm really looking forward to bowl season. It's one of those times of year that any given day you can have a couple games on. And it starts with probably one of the better bowl games, matchups of the bowl season. You got Troy and UTSA facing off. So I'm very excited to check out that game. I don't think there's, a ton of NFL draft prospects, but in terms of two programs that are really building a foundation in their respective conferences, I think it's certainly going to be one of the better ones, especially UTSA, who, continues to add to their team and continues to be a really good team. They're going to have, I believe they're going to have Frank Harris come back as well. So I'm very excited for that. And a lot of portal news. We'll get to in just a second, but huge tight end landing down the ACC. So I'm looking forward to talking more about that.
Heck yeah. We do have to talk about, before we dive into a lot of facts, there was some big news that was rather unfortunate, rather sad, that college football this week, as well as Mississippi State head coach Mike Leach did pass away. The legend all the way from Texas Tech to Washington State to Mississippi State, or in between and before. College football wouldn't be the same without Mike Leach. The air raid has Mike Leach's name all over it. So that's just some really unfortunate news coming out of college football this week. Mississippi State did hire their defensive coordinator as their head coach, but we do have to talk a little bit about Mike Leach and, guys like Cliff Kingsbury, and, there's no Patrick Mahomes without Mike Leach, so, really he is he's not technically the father, but he's the godfather of the air raid in college football. And, the sport isn't what it is today without Mike Leach. So, best wishes to him and his family. And, just an unfortunate, event. I said it was a serious heart attack, not much to speculate on, but, college football is not the same without Mike Leach, not a more animated player, not a more animated coach than Mike Leach. So.
Yeah, definitely sending thoughts and prayers to his family, Mississippi State organization, really all the former players and coaches of him too. Cause he's had a big impact, and obviously one of the more notable names that he coached and really helped develop is Gardner Minshew. So he gave his thoughts about his former coach, and a lot of people have been posting on social media. Reporters have been affected by him, and he was more than just a coach. For what you saw on TV, sure he was a spectacle and brought a lot of hilarious moments, but just from seeing kind of the outpouring of love from even some of the media that covered him, he just wasn't a, person that said funny things, in front of the microphone, but he also cared about the development and, just caring about people in general, wanted to always make people better around him. So sending my thoughts and prayers out to his family and everyone that was affected by him at some point in his life.
I will never forget that Texas Tech year, with Michael Crabtree being a legit Heisman candidate, and the big last second touchdown Michael Crabtree scored in the corner of the end zone, broken that tackle against Texas to give the Red Raiders that win. Just one of the more electric college football seasons, the more electric college football programs. And, if we're singling out one singular year and one singular team within that year, that Texas Tech team was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Graham Harrell was a guy that came from there. He's, coaching on the West Virginia football staff right now. So, I mean, he played for him as a coach, and I'm sure what they, what he learned from Leach was something that he's brought over, into his coaching career. So, it goes, like I said, far beyond football, but, just like you said, that Texas Tech team was a lot of fun. And, every stop he's been at, he's made some memorable moments. He's really brought the best out of his quarterbacks that, on the surface that they may not seem like NFL talent, but he's able to bring the best out of them. And Will Rogers is the latest example of that, and how he's been able to turn him into, one of the better passers in the SEC, just a testament to his coaching ability and acumen. So, like I said, huge news for the college football world, and you wish the best for his family and whatnot moving forward, but he'll always be honored by everyone that's coaching, that coach from under him, that's coaching now, and all the players that play or played under him.
Absolutely. And there's no good way to transition out of that. But we are moving forward now. So talking a little bit of portal news. So the portal's still booming. But a couple big names this week either entered the transfer portal or found an ending spot. First, Grayson McCall. A year ago around this time, Grayson McCall said, "When I say I pissed heel, I mean it." And no longer is Grayson McCall. He said he's going to play through the bowl game. Good for him. And then enter the transfer portal. I know I saw he's going to visit Auburn this week. So that's a big one. I would assume Liberty's probably going to be up there too with Jamie Chadwell taking that Liberty job. Grayson McCall's a player. I didn't think he would have that much interest transferring up just because he's in such niche offense and he does have such a limited arm. But it's interesting that, Brees is already on him at Auburn. So, what are your thoughts to Grayson McCall?
Yeah, I think McCall is one of those guys that, has really carved out a excellent college career. Obviously played in some big games, throughout his college career as well. Injuries kind of plagued him this season, and you really didn't see the best of him. But to me, he's a guy that I don't think he's a high upside NFL type player, but I think he's one of those guys that can stick around, and maybe he'll find himself on a roster. Maybe, with his athleticism, if it doesn't work at quarterback, maybe they think about using him elsewhere. But I'm very interested to see what comes of it, where he ends up at. 'Cause, at the very least, he's definitely can land at certainly another group of five team, and maybe one of those lower level power five. So we'll see if Auburn takes a swing on him, and see what comes of it. I'm not sure how much he moves a needle per se in a league like the SEC, but I'm certainly interested to see where he lands and where he ends up at and finishes college career.
Yeah, and again, if all else fails, I feel like Liberty is going to be a good fallback, in the NIL era. One, Chadwell takes the job there. Liberty's got some deep pockets, man. They can find some money to lure a guy like Grayson McCall into Liberty. So, I get it. Capitalize where you can. Again, I don't think he's got an NFL future at quarterback. So yeah, stay in college as long as you can. Maximize your financial gains as much as possible in the college level. And again, transferring out of Coastal, again, new head coach Tim Beck coming over from NC State. Go somewhere that's going to benefit you the most. If you don't feel like that's your situation, absolutely. I know a lot of people, yelling at the cloud, old man yelling at cloud about the NIL and players being able to capitalize. But I think it's great for the sport. It's a lot of fun to cover. It's madness. But Grayson's one of those guys. And again, one of the bigger names in the portal found a home this week is so South Carolina tight end slash H back slash running back slash whatever you need it to be. Jahiim Bell opted to enter the transfer portal rather than declare for the draft. And this week landed with Florida State, which I think is an interesting fit. I just hope he goes that Florida State's able to maximize what he can bring to the field. I don't feel like Shane Beamer did so at South Carolina. I probably wouldn't give him 13 carries a game like he was getting at South Carolina, but he's a guy who can make some plays and he can align all over the field. I would love him on my NFL team that I root for that knows how to maximize a guy as a tight end three H back, can align him as a big slot. He's a mismatch there. So Mike Norvell, he's in your hands. Take good care of him. Jaheim Bell, Florida State Seminole.
Yeah, that was I don't want to say a surprising move because people started to speculate and started making connections that he's probably going to land there. But Norvell is known for being creative, so we'll see just how creative he can get with Jaheim Bell. I mean, they have a solid receiving core down in Florida State, and I wonder if that having Bell now kind of convinces Jordan Travis to maybe come back for another year, or how the quarterback situation kind of unfolds.
I
Because
think
what?
Travis has already said he's coming back.
All right, well, there you got it. There you go. So Florida State's reloading and looking to possibly be a contender next year in ACC. We'll see how it all unfolds, but having Bell on your team, that gives you a lot of luxury, and all I can say is just don't waste the opportunity, because Bell probably gets drafted probably top 50, I would guess, top 75 if he entered the draft this year. So maybe he's trying to get to that first round area, but I think a lot of that will depend on if he can kind of establish, I don't want to say more of a main position, but more of a main role, so we know exactly who's going to be at the next level. And maybe you just continue to use him all over the place, but certainly we'd like to see him get the production that the talent warrants down in Florida State.
I'm a sucker for like move tight ends, man. Like I love Chig Okonkwo last year, who's balling out for this year as a rookie. Like he's about to set their rookie re receiving record as a tight end with the Titans. But I love tight ends who you can move all over the field and can do a variety of things. And Jaheim Bell has a clear path to be a contributor to the NFL. That's really, really exciting. Now transitioning into a little bit more NFL talk. We need to talk about some prospects. It's an NFL draft podcast, so we should probably talk about some specific processes, prospects. So one position that has caught a lot of buzz is the running back position. Again, running back position doesn't tend to have a lot of guys drafted in the first round, but there are a couple guys that might warrant that this year. So we're going to talk a little bit about the running back position. So Devin, obviously there's Jahmyr and there's Bijan Robinson. So in your opinion, do you value either of those running backs as guys that you could see, yeah, let's take those guys in the first round and let's run with it?
Yeah, I think both of them are first round talents. Now, in terms of where that lands, there's no way. I don't want to say no way. I find it hard to believe that there's going to be a running back selected in the top five. Obviously, I'm not going to name names in terms of who's putting him in the top five, but Bijan Robinson was in the top five mock, and to me, I understand it. He is really probably one of the better prospects we've seen in recent years in terms of what he can do with the football in his hands. I mean, the vision, the ability to make dudes miss, the obviously upside in the passing game. But to me, I think really after that, the first, I'd probably say after the top half of the draft, I would start looking at running backs in terms of picking them up. But I know it's a possibility that, maybe Bijan goes top 10. For me, I think Jahmyr Gibbs is probably a late first round guy. And testing, I think, is either going to solidify that or maybe it moves him down a bit. But to me, I think with Gibbs' skill set, I think I like kind of his blend of, it just looks so smooth running the football, his vision, but also in the passing game. I mean, he just makes so many big plays in the passing game as well. And it's not just, screens, but he can run routes down the field. I mean, you can split him out and he can provide a mismatch. But then after him, I think it's really going to be the interesting conversation. Obviously, Blake Corum is in the mix. Bijan Robinson's teammate, Roschon Johnson, has, I won't say significantly less usage, but has less usage than Bijan. And he's probably a guy that can stick around NFL roster too. So you're gonna have a lot of guys that bring a different type of skill set. And I think overall you're gonna see probably more running backs than you saw in previous years get selected because of the specialization. So I think for me, I wouldn't take either running back in the top 15, but that's just me. I think a team probably gonna take Bijan in somewhere in that range. But I think for Gibbs, he's probably a late first rounder, early second rounder.
So this is a fun exercise. Since Saquon, who obviously went overall in 2018, not a single running back has been drafted before the 24th overall pick. So again, Josh Jacobs, 24th overall. Najee Harris, 24th overall. Travis Etienne was I think 25th overall. I think Najee and Travis went back to back in 2021. And then no running back in the first round last year. So Clyde Edwards-Helaire 32nd overall as well. So as it sits now, 24th overall pick is forfeited from Miami because of the whole Stephen Ross situation from last year with the Stephen Ross, Brian Flores situation. 25th is Denver, who they have Javonte Williams. Melvin fumbled himself off their roster. Baltimore Ravens, Cincinnati Bengals, Dallas Cowboys, Kansas City Chiefs, Minnesota Vikings, Buffalo Bills, Philadelphia Eagles. Are kind of round out 25 to 32. I'm trying to look above 24. Giants don't need a running back. They got Saquon. Washington's got some other needs, obviously quarterback position being one of them. But Brian Robinson's looked really good since he's come back, and the adversity he suffered this summer and coming back from that. Do you see any team above the 24th pick that you could say, yeah, I could see a running back going here?
I mean it's tough because you look at kind of what history says versus what team needs are. I mean, the Chargers love Eckler, and obviously Seattle just spent the second round pick on Kenneth Walker. The Jets have a stable of running backs too, and they have Breece Hall selected in the second round. Man, I don't really I don't know if you can justify it. I mean, a lot of these teams have bigger needs. I mean, you look obviously in the top five. I mean, really the Eagles, I mean, they could be in the market for a running back. Miles Sanders might be a free agent this year. They obviously have Kenneth Walker on the roster, but I mean I don't think they make that move though. Arizona, they're always a weird situation. They have Connor, but I don't know. I mean, I really don't see it in conclusion, to be
Yeah.
honest. I just don't
I don't
right
either.
now at least.
The two spots that I could see potentially, and probably not even, but the two spots that stand out to me are 119 Tampa Bay, the worst run game in the NFL right now. Worst run game in the NFL right now. And I think it contributed towards their offensive line play has been not great. And I don't think their offensive scheme with Byron Leftwich is sequencing is helping. But what I come back to is how much do they value Rashad White? They just drafted him on day two last year. So they did just draft a rookie running back. But how much do they value Rashad White? Do they think that he can be a three down guy? And do they think that he can, or him and Fournette's been bad and he's been battling injuries, but do they think that they're confident enough in the running backs with the worst running game in the NFL at 19? Do they think, yeah, we could compete still? I mean, Tom Brady's 45. You're probably going to need a quarterback here soon too. So that's one. And then New England. They just drafted Pierre Strong on day three as well. Rhamondre Stevenson the year before. They still have Damian Harris, but they're a team that's always kind of like RBC, running back by committee. Is that a team that feels like, yeah, let's add a star running back in here? I don't think so. So yeah, I agree with you. I don't see a team. When we start talking about Buffalo at 31, they just drafted James Cook in the second round, but Buffalo's run game has historically struggled as well. Isaiah Pacheco has been playing pretty well at Kansas City, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire has not panned out at all. Could they make the move? Obviously, Philly's the big one. I really would pull the trigger. Looking at the roster, it's loaded. Miles Sanders has been playing really, really well though. So, man, yeah, Bijan's really good, and Jahmyr Gibbs is really good, but it's hard to find a landing spot for a running back in the first round this year. It's really hard to find a landing spot for either of those guys.
Yeah, we might see a situation like last year. We get a run on second round running backs, in kind of in that middle of the second round. But I think, I mean, I just keep looking at this list and it's just like nothing screams at me. But then again, you never know what happens. A lot of these teams sometimes, maybe if we're getting, I'll have to take a deeper look into some of the contract years that some of the running backs may have or they may be coming up. I mean, it could very well still happen, but the likelihood of it happening, I think, is pretty low at this point. Maybe Vegas pulls the trigger and get Bijan Robinson. because they're already not picking up Jacobs' option. Maybe that's a surprise running back landing spot.
Man, that would be wild considering he's leading the league in rushing. But again, they pick up his option. He's a free agent. So, man, maybe it is one of those situations where it's like, yeah, you lead the league in rushing, but the running back is the most volatile position with the shortest shelf life. So let's run you into the ground and then they might let him walk. I mean,
Yeah.
it's not unheard of. That wouldn't be out of the out of the realm. It would just be weird to see a team let the leading rusher in the entire NFL walk. That would be bizarre to watch. All right, now we end the part of the podcast. We've done it both episodes so far of, just a few guys that we've been watching, that we've been impressed by, not impressed by, just, who's been next up on our watch list. So who we're gonna talk about two guys each who two or three guys who have really impressed us, or made some sort of statement to us, we've been watching. And I'll kick off here with a little bit of a hot take. I've been watching through some pass rushers. And I know this about myself when I'm watching pass rushers. I have a massive bias towards dudes who have rubber bands for hips, who have rubber bands for lower bodies, who can bend the edge, who are flexible, can take tight corners and play well outside of the frame. So I'm going to start that off by saying like this, but I just watched LSU edge rusher B.J. Ojulari, and I'm not sure there's more than two pass rushers I'd take before him in the NFL draft. Like, he's got long levers for arms, massive length, flexible as hell, can bend the edge, take tight corners at will. I think he's got a pretty good repertoire of pass rush moves. And like, if you look at BJ Ojulari from 2021 and BJ Ojulari from 2022, and we talked about this last week when we talked about conference championship games, of prospects that are watching conference championship games, the first episode, when we talked about Ojulari versus Broderick Jones, he handled Broderick Jones in that game. Absolutely burned him a few times. And if you look at it from 2021 to 2022, the body transformation is astounding. That dude rocked himself up over the summer. And his tape is phenomenal. I watched the Alabama game. I watched the Georgia game. Both those games, I mean, Jason Latham is probably going to go in the first round next year. He's playing right tackle for Alabama this year, might play swing over and play left tackle next year. And then Broderick Jones is probably going to go top 50 this year. And I thought he put on a show against both of those guys. Yeah, he could be a little bit better about the run, but he has long arms, and I think he understands how to use them as leverage. So that helps him set a strong edge. So BJ Ojulari, again, I think he's a first round talent, and I don't know if there's, Will Anderson, Miles Murphy, blank. I think I might slide BJ Ojulari into that blank. That's how impressed I was with this tape.
Yeah, Ojulari, man, he's supremely talented. And to me, I think, with Brian Kelly coming in, I think, that the newfound defense has really unlocked his potential and really let him do what he does best is and get after quarterbacks. And he really unlocked the ability, like you said, to use that his long arms to disengage and be able to play, or setting the edge and then the bend ability. I mean, you gotta be a sucker for guys that can do that, and he certainly fits the bill. Speaking of biases, I love corners that are in your face, that are physical, that can click and close with hip fluidity. And Devin Witherspoon from Illinois. I know we talked a lot about the Illinois defense, but man, I'm a big fan of Witherspoon. Watched the games against Michigan, Purdue, in Nebraska. And man, that Michigan game was a lot of fun. He did get beat early in the game, I think, on an out route, and then missed the tackle. But after that play, he was locked down. He was able to. I think there was a play that Michigan did, kind of a one of those rollout type plays, and the receiver was kind of running one of those delayed out routes, and he it looked like he was going to get him, but Witherspoon's ability to close on a football is impressive. Same thing in the Purdue game. They called a lot of ticky-tack pass interference calls against Witherspoon in that game. I get it. The physicality sometimes can take over a little bit, and that's one of my worries about his game. But I mean, the way he's able to fade dudes into the sideline, is recognition with the ball in the air. Always kind of that spatial awareness that even if for a second or two, receiver is able to get free, his recovery speed is so quick and he's able to use and to get his head around and get his hands on the football. He had 14 pass breakups this year and three interceptions, two of them coming in the last game against Northwestern. But I was just so impressed and with what he did in off man coverage. He's able to be right there when the ball is, even when catches are made on him, he's right there. So I love that ability. I love dudes who are physical during the route, at the catch point, or are competitive at the catch point, not just giving up those easy catches, but making them work for everything. So I love Witherspoon. I think he's a top 20 talent in this class, and I would not be surprised if he's one of the top three corners off the board.
Yeah, Dane Brugler mocked him in the first round of his latest mock draft. So when Dane tends to put you in the first round, that's when you, one, Dane hears a lot of things from scouts, and two, Dane's got a good eye for that thing. So if you see him in a first round mock of Dane Brugler, then you know the hype around him is real. And again, the Fighting Illini had the best defense in college football on an EPA per play, EPA per game basis, best power defense in college football, which is high praise for a school that doesn't give five stars, that rarely four stars. So they're playing a bunch of, three stars, and dominated. And Witherspoon is a big reason of that. Probably the best play, best defense in college football. And, defensive coordinator Ryan Walters just got the head coaching job at Purdue because of it. So, I love Johnny Newton out of Illinois as well. So I do wonder if that might sway his decision to declare well, maybe as a redshirt sophomore. But my second guy I'm going to talk about, we're going to go to Clemson. Clemson's got a couple defensive tackles, three of them actually. We're talking about Brian Bruce, going to go top 15. Tyler Davis is probably going to find a role, probably on day three as well. But I'm going to go with the third guy and talk about Ruk Ohorohoro. I think I looked it up beforehand, and I'm still not sure. But if I say it with confidence, that means it's right. And I think he's going to be one of those fringe top 100 guys that comp pick to fourth round range, as a defensive tackle in the class. Again, he's also got some length to him, almost 34 inch arms. Knows how to with leverage as well. Really good pad level, can shoot out and push into the chest of blockers across from him. He anchors doubles really, really well. I really noticed about his game. I think he's probably just going to be a two down of tackle early in his career at the next level. I didn't see a whole lot as a pass rusher, but he's got a lot to like. Gets off the ball really well. Again, really good pad level leverage. And so I was really, really impressed with Rook. I'm not even going to try his last name again. I'm just going to call him Rook. He's going down at the Senior Bowl, got an invite. So we'll see how he holds up in one-on-ones, how he holds up in team sessions. But the NFL teams are going to like him based on his ability to win at the point of attack and to dig his heels in and anchor doubles at a high level, even if he can't provide much on pass early in his career. So, really, really good defensive tackle class, and that's just another name to add into the mix. But he's going to get drafted, I would say, late, early four.
Yeah, Clemson, man, they're always developing those defensive linemen, and obviously got a couple like you mentioned, Murphy and Brisset, but yeah, I'm very excited to dive into his tape and see a little bit more, because I watched him preseason and saw him against Georgia last year. He made some really nice plays against Georgia, and just in passing, he's made some plays. So excited to dive into him a little bit later in the process. Second player I'll bring up is a guy that, I came into the season, really had high hopes for him, and thought he was really going to take off in the SEC, but really struggled this year, and was Anfernee Orji from Vanderbilt. And he was a dude that consistently leads his teams in tackles, and kind of the mantra people are hear Vanderbilt and like, oh, they have guys there, but for Orji, I was just very disappointed in his tape versus prior to the season versus in the season, and it had a lot to do with his tackling and tackling angles. I thought, it seems like he's there ready to make plays, and he's not finishing these plays. And these are plays he made last year. I thought his game against last year against Tennessee was really good. I watched the tape this year against Tennessee, and he was just all over the place. Eyes were in the wrong spot. Taking poor angles, trying to throw dudes down versus tackling through them. And then in coverage too, just did not see the same guy that I saw his last year's tape. He was getting depth on his drops, but He wasn't getting into passing lanes. I think there was a play against Georgia. I watched the Georgia game as well, where I thought he did a solid job of carrying Darnell Washington up the on a wheel route, but didn't get his eyes around. And then just in general, I just didn't see the impact plays that I saw, from last year to this year, and it kind of took a step back in consistency. So I was hoping coming to the season that he was a guy, maybe he cracks the top 100, top 150. I think he's probably more of a 6th, 7th round guy because he's a core special teamer. He's on every single special teams for Vandy, and he does a great job at that. So I think that's probably going to be his calling card at the NFL level. I think he has sufficient speed to do it, but the eyes and the missed tackles were a big red flag for me in watching his film. So to me, I think he's still a guy that can get drafted. I think he'll have to test well and really go through the draft process. Hopefully he gets a senior game invite to give him a chance to kind of bounce back and address some of those concerns. But overall, I came away disappointed with his tape and what he brought to the table.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring in the linebacker. I finish up edge rusher here again. I write for the Portland, so I'm kind of starting positions of need and defensive tackle, edge rusher, linebacker, all pretty big needs. So I'm excited to dive into linebackers. I'm gonna start with Drew Sanders, work from there. But that's it for now. Again, this is episode 3 of the Daft on Draft podcast. Next week I have some bowl games that have been played to talk about. Prospects out in that, and then as the draft process gets going, and Dev and I get some more depth to our big boards being built, we'll be able to break down rankings, top 50, positional breakdowns, and all the good stuff from drawn out. But until next week, Devin, thanks again for joining me as the pilot on this journey, and we will be back next week for episode 4.